Now find island-inspired, limited-time flavors at Whole Foods Market for the Explore the Tropics sales event. Enjoy pre-marinated mains like mango coconut salmon and pineapple teriyaki chicken and pair them with seasoned, ready-to-heat beans from a dozen cousins. Need dinner and a snap? Grab zesty lime shrimp salad, mango turkey burgers, and more from prepared foods. And of course, there's the mango yuzu chantilly cake. Explore the tropics and save at Whole Foods Market in-store and online.
It's game time. And if you've got a hunch about this NBA season, you could turn it into a big win on FanDuel. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets if you win.
Ooh, that guy's hotter than a microwave burrito.
Now that's a red-hot hunch.
21 plus and present in Ohio. Must be first online real money wager. $5 deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now I'm joined in studio, and this is the day, of course, of the week that the Farmers Journal comes out for farming folk. It's a pleasure to welcome the Minister for Agriculture, Food, Fisheries and the Marine, because obviously, with the latest ramping up of rhetoric, at least in relation to Trump, the prospect of tariffs next week from the 2nd of April is becoming ever more apparent. It started with steel and aluminium. Then it's now gone on to cars. And of course, the EU reprisals involved 26 billion of trade, which they were going to put reciprocal tariffs on US imports. And that meant that Trump said he would raise a specific tariff on alcohol imported in exchange for bourbon, and that would affect 800 million of Irish drinks exports. Welcome to the programme, Minister.
Good morning, Ivan.
That's your listeners. So, first of all, you held you were part of, in Brussels earlier this week, the monthly agriculture ministers meeting. What is the strategy of the EU as regards the food sector and tariffs?
Well, the strategy of the EU is a collective one. Our strength is at the heart of Europe, and that our dealing with these issues is not allowing the US or anybody else pick us off one item at a time. So, of course, we highlight, and each member state will talk about the impact that different tariffs or counter tariffs could have on our own individual sectors. But we're mindful of the fact that, look, Europe doesn't want to be in this position. It doesn't want to be coming with a counter list. But the only way you can negotiate in such difficult circumstances like this, where we really regret what the US has done, is from a position of strength. So we have to come with a list of measures that will have an impact in the US and make them come to the table. So the EU approach, and I very much welcome it, Commissioner Sefcovic, who's been dealing very closely with our Taoiseach, to Simon Harris, who has responsibility for trade, has agreed to take a step back. We've had a consultation process in terms of our Irish companies that could be impacted, and European countries have been able to make submissions up until yesterday. And also then we have had a process where they're not going to introduce a counter list immediately. They announced one, but it has been open to consultation, and it will take time to reflect. Obviously, President Trump is going to come with his Liberation Day speech on the 2nd of April, and the EU has indicated that we won't announce our reaction to that and probably until more into the middle of April, which gives time for negotiation. And that's really, really important. And from my perspective, working with my colleagues across the AgFish Council in Brussels, but also leading the trade mission to the US then on the week of the 7th of April, will be a very important time to be out there talking to the companies and to senior political figures in Washington as well.
Okay, could you outline for us, because there's been a lot of talk of the 54 billion of pharma and medical devices and medicines that we export from US multinationals back to the US. What is the profile of the Irish food and drink exports to the US?
So the US are our second biggest trading partner after the UK. We exported about 2 billion euros worth of agri-food products to the US last year. That was predominantly made up of butter, Kerrygold being a phenomenally successful Irish agri-food produce that is second in position in terms of market share in the US, and also Irish whiskey, which Irish whiskey would be 500 million euros worth as well of that trade.
Is there any meat?
We have access, but it's in reality that tariff has been filled by Brazil in recent years. So the meat side of things is much less impacted now.
Okay, so yesterday I was actually doing an event for the drinks industry, and I met this exporter of gin. And he said, Ivan, it's very simple. Most of the products, whether it's a bottle of whiskey, a bottle of Bailey's or a bottle of gin emanating from Ireland, retails in the US for about $50. He said, if that was to go up to $150 with the tariffs, it just wouldn't sell. It just wouldn't sell. That's pretty grim prospect for people.
And look, that's what's in the focus now, because the initial counter list that the EU suggested it would go with was the 2018 list. And that list had bourbon on it for very specific political reasons at that time that are probably less relevant now. And the concern was by the EU saying bourbon, of which we have a much less import amount of into the EU, it would put Irish whiskey, French wine, French cognac, Spanish wine, Italian Prosecco, all in the firing line. So they're the type of points that have been made. But, you know, if we end up in that space, having allowing one sector be played off another, what we have done is had a calm, cool conversation inside to make sure that the approach of the EU has the most impact, so that when the EU is putting stuff on a counter list, it is something that will have an impact in the US that could help bring them to the table in terms of these negotiations. But the last thing we want to do is get into a tit for tat. In relation to specific items, we just need to have a strong enough response that, you know, it has an impact in America that makes America come to the table and that we can negotiate this out. And I would remind people of 2018, it was a time where the starting point was very, very difficult and negotiations did work its way out. So the efforts of the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, the efforts of Pascal Donoghue as our Minister for Finance and Chair of the ECOFIN, my role in the Department of Agriculture on the Agri-Food side, Minister Peter Burke in Enterprise, you know, all of our efforts on a European level, working collectively as Europe. If there's one probably broader point I'd make is this feels like Brexit Mark II. One of our biggest trading partners is on a path that is going to damage them, damage us. And the EU is going to have to respond, and that response is going to create pain as well. But our only position here to be in is collectively at the heart of Europe, and Ireland is very well placed to have our voice heard in those negotiations.
Now, this is Trump 2.0. We know the way he operates. What is the kind of inside the corridors feeling? Because, you know, he's looking at trade deficit, he's looking at a budget deficit. But if he is able to get an EU contribution towards NATO, if he's able to get us to buy American energy through LNG and other things, what do you see the dynamics, given that he's into the art of the deal? What are the potential dynamics of a deal? What do you have to offer? And, you know, what do you think might be the final, if there was a negotiated settlement, and nearly always there is, what it might look like?
Yeah, so you very much hope we can get to a position where we are negotiating a settlement, where we can take a step back from the brink here. I'm really mindful that the gin company you just talked about and so many other companies, small fledgling companies, like if you think of our distilleries, only a few years ago we had 4 distilleries, now we're over 40. They're all fledgling small companies that have started, big cash flow outflow, and under very vulnerable, you know, with the US a massive
I'm
market.
I'm familiar with O'Driscoll's and a lot of them, and it's a tough situation.
It is. So I'm conscious of people listening here now who's are worried for their jobs and worried for their companies, and we're talking, like, it is a bit of a game in terms of trying to second guess what is, how is the game going to be played by the US. So I think from our perspective, what's really important is that you counter some of that narrative and the rhetoric. I think, first of all, the 2nd of April, while it will hugely impact our companies and what happens here in Ireland, it is about the domestic audience for Donald Trump. I think he has called it Liberation Day. You know, we are impacted, but we are going to be observers that day, effectively, and then be ready to respond. But from my perspective, and if I reflect on my role in terms of my trip to the US the following week, it's also about countering the narrative, engaging with senior Republican figures, visiting Republican states, highlighting the fact that there are 770 Irish companies based over in the US who employ over 200,000 people, 200,000 American people who source products locally in America as well. To counter that narrative that somehow, to make people aware that this is a very symbiotic relationship from which America benefits greatly as well.
One of the things I've heard is that tariffs could end up at 2.5%, and that actually the rate, you know, and also on the cliff edge, I'm told that a lot of pre-sales have occurred in January, February in expectation of this. And so for those reasons, the stocks maybe of American distributors and wholesalers are quite high. Mm-hmm. So just in terms of reassuring people, you should be worried, but you shouldn't be alarmed, is what I'm really trying to get at.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, Minister Pascal Dunne, who addressed our parliamentary party meeting, a Fine Gael parliamentary party meeting last night, and set out really clearly the threats, the concerns we have, the very significant impact this can have on us, but also kind of brought us back to the likes of the challenge of the pandemic, the likes of the challenge of the cost of living crisis after the invasion of Ukraine, the impact of Brexit, and how we manage to navigate all of those areas. And we do this from a position of strength, with a surplus, with a strong basis on our economy. And absolutely, we're in for a turbulent time. But there's no one I'd prefer to have as our Taoiseach for Trade as Simon Harris and Minister Donoghue in terms of that role, the role of the Taoiseach, and what he will play in Brussels this week as well. You know, we work collectively, and I think the people can be reassured. They elected this government for moments just like this. And I think we're well placed to protect Ireland's interests.
The other trade threat, which is particularly impactful on beef, is this Mercosur deal.
Yep.
And as you know, for many years now, for the last 5 years, the farm organisations have been lobbying to say the threat of very cheap Brazilian and Argentinian beef flooding the market, I think there's a provision in the deal, is 99,000 tonnes of beef.
That's great.
So they in total export 45,000 tonnes of beef. Their cost structure, their compliance regime is completely different. What is going to happen with the Mercosur deal? Because my understanding is that both Macron and during the election, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil gave commitments that they would resist the Mercosur deal. It now seems to be something, as far as the Commission is concerned, the President of the Commission, of a done deal. Where are we actually at?
Yeah, so obviously the Mercosur countries are South America, Argentina, Brazil, Paraguay and Uruguay, who have their customs area, and the EU has been very keen for some time to do a trade deal. And I'm conscious, pivoting from the discussion we've just had, I think it's important to say that trade deals are generally very good for Ireland. If I take my own position in agriculture, farmers benefit hugely and our agri-food sector benefit hugely from all of the trade deals and being part of the EU common trading area. We export 90% of the food and drink we produce, and we export it to 180 countries around the world where it's trusted at home and abroad. But the Mercosur deal has been really challenging. Obviously, there is some Mercosur beef comes into Europe already, but it comes in at a very high TRQ or tariff rate. And what this effectively means is that 99,000 tonnes could come in at 7.5% tariff, which is a lower tariff, and reduces over 6 years to zero. It's economically has been adjudged to possibly cost our beef sector €50 million in this country. So it is a negative for us from a financial perspective.
And that would be not necessarily imports in turn, but this would be French and German markets where we successfully sell beef to the continent, which could be displaced by South America.
Yes, absolutely. The UK is our biggest market for beef, where we sell 52% of our beef. But thereafter, over 30% of our beef goes to the rest of Europe. Having more beef in there competing with Irish produce would impact us. And that €50 million would be a hit and would be a negative. But in the context of a €3 billion beef industry, it wouldn't be the end of us. We could manage it.
So you're saying this is going to happen?
No, I'm not. I'm making the context that my bigger point I've actually made about this before, and the bigger issue I have about Mercosur and that the Taoiseach shares and others in government share, is the fact that how do you ask Irish farmers to continue to do new measures to reduce further our environmental impact, to reduce our emissions and all those things that we are doing in a really positive way while continuing to produce that top quality food. How do you ask them to continue to do that with all the extra cost and regulation that comes with that, while then on the other hand allowing produce that comes in from areas...
What's the answer to that valid question?
The answer to the valid question is why Ireland has opposed the Mercosur deal in its current form, why we've every step of the way we've gone along and raised those concerns. So you mentioned in the election that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil were opposed to the Mercosur deal. Further than that, it's written in the programme for government, our opposition to it and our concerns about it. So what we do...
But this would be majority rule, would it not be?
It would be majority rule.
It's not a veto issue.
So what it would require is... is a 35% blocking minority, and that's 35% of the EU population.
And is that doable?
It is if enough big countries with big populations come in. So France.
So would that block the whole Mercosur deal or the meat aspect of it?
Potentially the whole Mercosur deal. So like we have at present countries like Germany and Spain who would be very supportive.
So it'll go to the Council of Ministers. Will it, or the president of the council, yeah.
The legal scrubbing, as they call it, of the text is ongoing. There will be votes in a few months' time. But what we are doing in government, to answer your original point, is working with like-minded countries. In Brussels on Monday, I had a bilateral meeting with my French counterpart, the French Minister for Agriculture, where we discussed our shared concerns. The Italians are in that space as well, but maybe not quite as forthright as the French, so still seeing where they are at. Poland, Austria, or others who would have expressed significant concerns here.
So what you're saying, it's all duck or no dinner insofar as the Mercosur agreement may not be ratified, or if it is ratified, we face this 50 million. Is that the conclusion you're drawing?
Possibly. And look, I focused on the beef element. There are elements of this that are good for the country. There's other elements of the deal. You know, even the dairy sector would benefit rather than have a negative, but not to the same extent. But ultimately, trade is an EU competence. That's why Ursula von der Leyen was able to go over at the end of last year and sign this trade deal. But there is that process to be gone through now. That is an ongoing process. And, you know, government is true to its word in terms of its ongoing negotiations. And I know Tánaiste Simon Harris continues to raise this as well. And he'll be taking the lead on these trade negotiations in the months ahead.
Now, I alluded to the Farmers Journal, and the front page this morning screams, "Acres anger as 9,300 still owed money." And the story goes on to say that advance payments of 4.6 million were made to farmers last Friday. However, 83% of farmers have not received their payments. And then there's 2,300 who are still owed for 2023. There's no alibi here. Like, it's the department who have to process this and pay this. First of all, what's caused the problem that the payments aren't timely?
So for your listeners who aren't aware, Acres is our agri-environmental scheme, a 1.5 billion euro scheme which supports our farmers in the additional measures they're taking on to improve our biodiversity, our air quality, and many different measures. And farmers have been really ambitious in this space. We've had, it was oversubscribed, so we opened it up a second time, and we now have 54,000 farmers length of breadth of the country signed up to Acres, filling out their scorecards, taking on a range of different measures that improve the environmental impact of their individual farms. And it is completely unacceptable that this new scheme has encountered many difficulties from a processing perspective.
An IT problem, is it?
It's not just an IT problem. It's a processing problem as well as an IT problem. If there was one...
But whoever's problem, it's not the farmer's fault.
In some instances, some of the farmers who are unpaid have issues around probate and title. I would say they're in the minority, but there are some of the farmers that have problems that they have to fix on their side. The majority of problems are on the department side. So when I came into the department...
But you were in the department before.
I was. I didn't have responsibility for Acres, and okay. I walked up the corridor...
Who are you thrown under the bus
into
there?
The senior... No, I'm not throwing anybody. I'm just saying on the 20th...
Charlie McConnell.
On the 23rd of January, I became minister 9 weeks ago, and at that point there were 14,500 Acres participants with payments outstanding. Now, many of them received an interim payment last year, but that's not the point. The point here is that... Their contractual obligations haven't been met. It's not acceptable. And I've put a clear focus on how we try and fix this.
So when will they be paid?
The 14,500, 9 weeks later, is now down to 9,300. I've made a clear commitment. We are making payment runs every week. I've been down in Johnstown Castle with the officials. I've made a number of changes, put in a very clear focus on and priority on resolving this as quickly as possible. And my intention is to have the vast majority of farmers sorted by the time the balancing payments are made in May, with the very last of the most difficult cases to be resolved by the end of June.
Also on the front page of the Journal is an ongoing thing I'm hearing from a lot of my country cousins, which is that the TB problem, the incidence of TB is rising. Now, what is it, 40 years ago when I was minister, 30 years ago, I completely changed and I thought I dismantled this TB industry, but it persists. The ICMSA have called for control movements. What's your response?
Yeah, so we have a TB forum that has been working for some time. Look, a couple of years ago, we were down to 4%, looking like on a trajectory of heading in the direction of 3% of incidents in our herds, the length and breadth of the country. Things have gone very badly wrong. We're over now 6% in this space of our herd. We lost 40,000 animals to TB as reactors last year. This is an unsustainable position to be in. And, you know, the farm organisations have been engaged through the some period of time. Ultimately here, there is no, like, you'll have some people saying it's the wildlife, it's the movements, it's different elements. There is no one element here that is this. And the response needs a very significant change to our TB eradication programme because it's not working. What I really want to get to, and the best way forward, is an agreed consensus between all the stakeholders. There was a number of proposals discussed at the TB forum yesterday. The farm organisations have come with proposals from their side. And ultimately, I'm going to bring
everyone
together. But
the book stops with you, Minister.
It absolutely does.
Like, simply in terms, you could have a 60-day pre-movement test, yes or no.
So it isn't any one individual measure. So some people will say to you, it's all in the wildlife. It's all in the badger is the problem. The deer is the problem in West Wicklow or South Kildare, where I am, the badger. And that's all it is. It's not just that. We should not be surprised there is a higher incidence in our wildlife when there's a higher incidence in our herds. That's a natural thing. They're coalescing. They're in that space. So movements here are a significant issue. And the ICMSA have made very significant proposals in that regard. So ultimately here, what I want to work with is the farm organisations. I want decisions to be made based on science and obviously on the departments.
You sound like a follower rather than a leader there.
No, absolutely not. I was just about to make the point that some of the interventions and changes that have to be made around my department site. Our TB eradication programme hasn't worked. Our wildlife programme and interventions haven't worked either. So there'll be significant leadership shown on my part on that side. And ultimately here...
So when do you expect decisions to be made?
In the coming weeks.
Okay. Just on it. I mean, like, from my own experience, I remember in Offaly and so on, where we did a major cull, there was no doubt the badgers were responsible. Because you could see it like night and day that, you know, where there was a badger infect, the badgers drink maybe in the same water troughs, they spread the disease, yeah, and so on.
But I mean, like, in the UK,
they got a real get tough attitude on the, yeah, badger. And this was actually to protect human health and animal health. It's the right thing to do.
So I'm not for a minute saying that we don't have a wildlife program and a very significant intervention there. I've said some of the changes need to happen, need to be on my department side. But we have seen a really significant increase in incidences in herds where I remember only once at home we had a reactor in the mid-1990s. I was still in school. I remember the devastation, not just the cost of it, because obviously your herd gets locked up and you're greatly restricted, and that didn't suit our farmer model at the time, but the devastation of my mother and us, it was like a death in the family.
No, it's a psychological.
That trauma is affecting 6% of our farmers, yeah, in the British country. It's my job to make sure that the other 94% don't get it, and okay, that we get that 6%.
Finally, we await those decisions. I was intrigued to read, and this is the last question I just want to ask you in relation to agriculture. I was intrigued to read that in the programme for government, there was a particular attention in relation to succession. And I think the average age of farmers is not far off 60. And we have a huge ageing demographic of farmers. And I know so many farmers whose sons and daughters don't want to be farmers. Yep. They don't want the 7-day week cow and all of that. And so therefore, those who do go to ag college and want a career on the land, they really have no entry point. Land prices 15,000 an acre. There's no way in a month of Sundays they can mortgage themselves to it. And the whole issue of A, succession, and, you know, I'm involved in solar farm development, and the amount of farmers who are actually owning the land but actually working in Pfizer or something like, mm-hmm, that is quite incredible. I mean, what are you going to do to ensure that there is the next cohort of 25,000 full-time farmers? It's a big challenge.
It's a huge challenge. And if I can make one broader point, we've discussed a lot of the issues I have to deal with on a day-to-day basis in the Department of Agriculture, acres, TB, different problems that will arise. But I'm very clear. In my mind, there are key issues that I have to progress that aren't on fire tomorrow, but have got to be progressed. Generational renewal is one of them. The nitrates directive is the other. And CAP reform, when we will have the presidency of the EU and I'll be president of the Agri-Fish Council in the second half of 26, will be a pivotal time when we get the CAP over the line. So generational renewal is a key part of that. We have a commission that is due to report back to me in June. But at its heart here is, like you talked about, people working in Pfizer. I'm very mindful. Part of the challenge is that next generation of young farmers have a lot of other options locally of good jobs and good
food. 5-day weeks, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, we definitely have to support those older farmers who want to step back. But ultimately, it is about access and...
But do you have a big new idea for succession?
I am very clear here that the focus has to be on the new entrant and on their approach here. And ultimately, at its heart, Ivan, is income. You know, I don't expect a farmer's son or daughter to accept a lesser quality of life or a lesser income based on than their peers in college or in school because they're going to take on the farm.
Final thing, I can't let you go without speaking the story of the week, the Dáil Speaking Row. We'll be speaking to Richard Boyd Barrett. I assume that Verona will survive the vote of confidence, but like when you trace it back, the nub of this thing is not about Verona, it's not about whatever. It actually goes back to the 3rd of February when she made a ruling saying, look, you couldn't really be in opposition and in government at the same time. And, in, you know, the RIG, the independents, are government backbenchers, the same as the Greens. Do you not think, like, you had a way out where you could blame the Crown Court there, that the government have dug on the original issue and on the net issue, whatever about the Dáil tactics, have dug themselves in a hole here?
So we leave aside the Dáil tactics, which were really dreadful during the week, and shocking scenes for me to witness. 14 years as TD, I didn't think I'd see the scenes that I did, and the disrespect there was for the chair, who I thought.
But my question was about the original issue.
No, and the original issue here is, look, I don't expect ever in my lifetime to see a single party majority government into the future. So this isn't even just about now. And people want to make it a bogeyman argument about one person or one individual or at this moment in time. We are going to continuously have coalition governments in this country into the future. And on many occasions, that will depend independents or smaller groups forming part of that government or supporting that government from within government, but not necessarily being ministers. Now, how do you expect anybody to sign up to that if they're going to sign up to a scenario? So if you're Barry Heenahan as a new TD or if you're Gillian O'Toole, that you're asking them to sign up where they would have less opportunities to raise issues of concern to them. Their mandate is no different than the mandate of someone in a seat on the opposition benches. Okay. No more than the mandate of the backbench Billy Gale or Fianna Fáil TD.
Is it appropriate for Michael Lowry to give the two fingers to another member?
No. But similarly, it's not appropriate for a range of different things that happened in that chamber. Really, really shocking scenes.
Do you think he should apologise, Michael Lowry?
Yes, I that was wrong. But also, there was a lot of other things wrong. Ultimately, what the opposition did on Tuesday was try to prevent a democratic vote happening. Now, democracy isn't decisions being made by a minority. So, you know, they tried to stop a vote happening, a vote that won by 20 clear votes. That's a result of the general election. That's a result of the majority of the government vote. We've had 2 months where we've compromised trying to work with them. We need to form our government committees. The Public Accounts Committee will be chaired by the opposition. So we absolutely need to get to a point where we get on with the business of the day. So
okay, we'll be speaking to Richard Boyd Barrett after 10 o'clock about that. Martin Hayden, a Fine Gael TD for South Kildare, Minister for Agriculture, Food, Fisheries and Marine. Thank you for coming into us and discussing all these issues.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
High Five Casino is the top choice for social casino gaming that's free to play. With chances to win and redeem for real cash prizes, free spin rewards, and tons of exclusive games, you can experience more High Five moments than ever before. You're going to want to high five everyone. The neighbors, the mailman, all your coworkers, of course your friends. Well, you get the point. Your High Five moment awaits at highfivecasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.